When he... Oh, I got a little ahead of myself. I was so excited for the page. Welcome back to the Narrow Pod Between Pages. It's the daily podcast where we read a page of The Narrow Road Between Desires, and then we talk about it. And sometimes we even get through the introduction before we begin reading. This is page 137. When he did a bigger read, he said there was always one pull you needed to ignore. Half of reading proper was figuring out which one. Bast reached out, grinning suddenly as he tussled Kostril's hair. Then, without any preamble, he gathered up his embrils and was down the hillside, fast as dancing, heading off, far and away. Bast had been trotting briskly for a quarter mile when he finally heard Reik calling his name through the trees. Surprised, Bast slowed to a stop and watched the boy run up the thin dirt path toward him. "I've got it," Reik said triumphantly. Breathless, he held up his hand. The entire lower half of his body was dripping wet. "What, already?" Bast asked. The boy nodded and flourished the dark stone between two fingers. It was flat and smooth and rounded, slightly smaller than the lid of a jam jar. "What now?" Bast stroked his chin for a moment as if trying to remember. "Well, now we need a needle, but it has to be borrowed from a house where no men live. I'm John from Vintus."
"I'm Joy."
"I'm Patrick."
This is such a fascinating, like, sort of kink in the method of reading embrils, right? That you have to ignore one of them. And that there's a trick to that. Like, that's sort of the key to good reading. That's a fun little twist.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And that's a take from Kostril's grandfather.
I love all these little details that we get that just makes the world feel so rich and full.
Like, that is like the key. That's a key to world building, right? Is making it feel like there's so much more going on than just what's given to you on the page about the main characters. Like, that's what makes Lord of the Rings the classic that it is, because it's built upon this vast trove of lore.
Oh, there's an obscene amount of lore for Lord of the Rings.
It doesn't hurt that he, like, made up full languages for it either.
Well, right, like,
he predated the books. He made the languages, and then he wrote books so that he got excuses to use them. It's ridiculous, this dude.
Yep, that's exactly right.
English professors just making up languages in their spare time.
That's why when I was a kid, people would ask me what I wanted to be when I grow up, and I'd be like, philologist. Because that's what he was.
Amazing.
No, I did not do that. Okay, I have a question for you guys. What do you picture when you picture a human trotting? Because as a horse person, I feel very confused by this image. I mean, or even just like a Bast trotting, you know.
So can you define a trot for us? What does that look like?
Okay,
what's a horse trot?
Yeah. Horses have four gaits: walk, trot, canter, gallop. Walk has four beats, trot has two, canter has three, and gallop has four. Trot is kind of like bouncy. You know when you see people going up and down when they're riding a horse? And you hear that, like, clip-clop on, like, pavestones, that's a trot.
Because it has two beats. It's both sets of hooves, like,
yeah,
on either side.
Opposite diagonals.
Okay, yeah. Uh-huh. What is hitting... So you said a canter has three. What's hitting in a canter?
So a hind leg, diagonal pair, and then a front leg.
Okay. Yeah. I got that. Sure.
So a trot is like a very jaunty kind of thing to do, but I can't really picture. Because I guess,
right.
Person,
so in human terms, to me, a trot is basically synonymous with a jog. Maybe it's slightly more energetic than a jog. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, I guess it's like an easy jog. Trotting briskly just means he's like
right, and it's a brisk trot. It's not just not just a casual trot.
So that's just like he's not running, but he's
so 5 miles an hour. Six.
I think that might even be a little fast.
Well, I don't know. I'd probably give a brisk trot. I could give 5 miles an hour.
I mean, I think a nice, like the slowest jog is 5. Maybe I'm crazy.
Well, you're like a you're a whole yoga master, so you probably jog better than the majority of people. I mean, certainly, my jog is definitely not 5 miles an hour.
I'm a very casual runner, but I run probably about 6.
Yeah.
6 miles an hour. So yeah, it's I could see a brisk trot being 5.
Sure.
Okay. All right, that answers my question. Sorry for having a question that should be obvious.
Yeah,
great. Like, these discourses are like excellent content. We love it.
The other thing that I thought of, which probably doesn't fit with the actual definition of a trot, is when I'm running in like in trails and there's like a steep hill I'm going down, you kind of go
yes. Yeah.
I kind of pictured that a little bit. If that makes sense, even to
it
those
totally
people who
makes
are
sense to me.
Listening.
Yeah, that
sure.
Totally
yeah.
makes sense to me.
Yeah.
So I kind of pictured that as maybe a trot, but that's probably not what they meant.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But like, that's a very evocative picture. Yeah, for sure. And so I'm sure we're gonna get more about this on tomorrow's page. But like, the needle that must be borrowed from a house where no men live, and we'll see how much of that is fairy nonsense busy work, and again, or if he's just hassling Reich, or if that's necessary.
Yeah, I don't think we'll know how much is fairy nonsense busy work. I don't think we're going to get that answer in the end. We can only guess,
right?
Like.
We can surmise from the last passage where he said, mm-hmm. "Oh yeah, and it has to be dry on the shore, and definitely it needs to have the sun touching it."
Yeah, and he even said that like, in the text is like, "Oh, he right. improvised that this part." Yes. It was like, "Oh, he doesn't really need that much, but he does need a fairy stone. Maybe it didn't need to be dry on the shore with the sun touching it. Maybe Reich didn't need to be the one to find it. Maybe it could have been found by someone else, but
I know
maybe similar with the needle. Like maybe it doesn't need to be borrowed. Maybe it doesn't need to come from a house with only women. But anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Joy.
No. I know John doesn't love it when we compare to Lightning Tree. However, I was just thinking that when you said that, it really made me think in Lightning Tree, there's this moment where Bast is really trying to get Reich to go to a different house to get the needle. And because we had that improv line earlier, it actually like gives me a different feel about why Bast may have said that. Like, this feels like a delaying tactic suddenly way more than a magical spell that has to be worked. Which is how I read it in Lightning Tree.
Yeah, it could be that he needs like a borrowed needle, but it doesn't need to be that specific.
Yeah.
A house where no men live. Maybe that's just, there's one house that fits those circumstances, which you said. I do recall that happening in Lightning Tree where he's like, oh no, that one doesn't count for reasons.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think at this point we can safely assume that it's approximately 30% nonsense when Bast is giving instructions to the children.
Well,
I don't know about always, but specifically this time, I would say yes.
Oh, and it could be. This just occurred to me. Maybe he's like messing with Reich and making it harder for him on purpose, just out of like a small amount of spite.
Just to be a dick.
Potentially. I think he's just trying to get rid of Reich because he is trying to go do something. But I mean, we'll definitely find out tomorrow.
Yeah. All right. Well, do we have any other horse stories or other comparisons to Lightning Tree that we need to make before we wrap this up?
Wow, I feel attacked.
The only thing I thought that the stone is larger than I expected, slightly smaller than the lid of a jam jar. Like, that's pretty significant.
I mean, a jam jar is...
Yeah.
That's
they're probably... not all the same. Well, true. I guess most of them are the same lid size. They're pretty standard. That's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if they would necessarily be replaceable. Like, replace the idea of replaceable parts is pretty modern, but in this world, it may not be.
Well, that and that's that is interesting because
interchangeable parts like is what I'm looking for.
The ball jar, like that standard mason jar that we think of, is only from like the I want to say it's like the early 1900s, right? Or
I have no idea.
In that basic, listeners, you can do your own cursory Google, and we'll write us a letter
about
that's cans. Right.
I mean, just interchangeable parts was a huge step forward in manufacturing. Like, that wasn't a thing for a really long time. Every gun, for example, was individually smithed,
right?
And you couldn't swap out parts from one gun to another for a very long time. And it's relatively modern within the last 150, 200 years or so that became a thing where you could swap out parts from one thing to another.
It's part of the Industrial Revolution, right?
Right. But then also with the different smithing and techniques, sigildry that they have in this world, they may already have that concept. So
yeah, that's legit.
Anyway,
they cast the mold in of the
The arrow catch.
Sure, but that's someone else could cast a different mold somewhere else, and that those would not be interchangeable between those two models. True. So, but yes.
Okay, something you could open with your hand is going to be a certain size. Jars aren't going to be bigger than the size of
that's true.
Hand.
All right, we've probably beat this to death enough.
And listener, we will beat you to death with a jam jar.
Oh no!
On tomorrow's narrow page.
Narrow page.